There's a line from the Goodfellas Club on page 31. It talks about mud philosophers, mm-hmm. and I just love that. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, I come from a family of people who love to fish, and male or female, my grandmother's a great fisherwoman, but never have I heard so many stories told or so much philosophy derived as standing on a bank waiting on a line to be tugged into the water. And when I thought of mud philosophers, it just fit, you know, it's just one of those things that just worked. Always philosophizing, as we say in the community, about something, the weather, bad times, good times. And that was always a sacred place to me. And right now, when things get awry, I always like to go back and just stand still on a bank and do some fishing, and all of those times come back.
Mm-hmm. Can you read that poem for us?
Sure. I'll just read a section of it because it's kind of long.
All right.
This is actually a very important poem to me in the book, and it's always special when I read it. It's about my father and my grandfather's generation, and I wondered who would fill their amazing shoes after they were long gone. There are ones who know the difference between everything and just anything, who taught a son, schooled a daughter by old gray firelight, passed from stick to smoky stick. Why? They must be in their 50s by now. I know you seen them, but don't know you knew if you knew how much you was looking at. Athletes never fallen, who always played for the game, not the shiny quarter rolling towards them on the ground. A quarterback couldn't sneak back then. There was what you were expected to do because of what you had been given, and there was nothing else. Your good work, whatever it was the everything about you. Why, they must be in their 60s by now. Men's who love poker and cards, sweet on dominoes, and could pop your knuckle and their own just kindly placing a checker on the board. They say Joe Louis's name like it's the sweet key to the kingdom. Keep big wooden radios that don't work covered up with a clean cloth like they do, or might again one day. Jack Johnson and a crying horn breaks their water quicker than a new blade from their medicine chest do their stubbly jaws. They love women's and still take themselves a look that way. Their old necks might river crack into another line or two, but they wouldn't yell out a roll down window. No matter how pretty the face, no matter how tight the skirt, they'd smile and keep it to themselves or wait till Friday when they always congregate to talk. And they'd walk away in a minute before ever lifting a finger wrong in her face. Some things you should still keep to yourself. They cut hair and work with the mail and sold their filling stations for pennies because little Junior got into state college and needed this and that. They sell insurance and mean it, flew air squadrons and remember it, love rice and gravy and meet once a year to wear something annual. Don't you look for them in any mall. Why? They must be in their 70s by now. They love a fried anything and won't eat without bread on the table. Poke their belly, you better run for cover, because they is all iced tea. Football on Sunday, but only after church. They ain't the deacon, but they are the whole row. They keep their Seventh-day shirt on all day and somehow never get it dirty. Just loosen up the collar some to let you know they've been to pray for you and back. Short little big feet men's, big high back giant reaching up men's with tarps and canopies for chests, steering the same car for 20,000 years because they don't make 'em like they used to. And they never buy but one and forever patch up the best one ever and lean back when they drive her like they still only 2 minutes old. You ain't seen nothing like it. I'm talking Deuces, Lincolns, and T-Birds that all have a woman's name. Holding on steamy men who give their last buffalo red cent for family, for a tradition, men who believed in making land and keeping it to pass it on so the children would always have something. Men who still pray so long before every meal that the food should be cold, but it's not. Never owe nobody, mine always says to me, last thing before he falls couch asleep. I creep to cover him, promising. Why, they must be in their 80s by now. Men's of the Goodfellas Club, they got to be in their 90s by now. Men's whose laughter, whose ways, whose wondering eyes, I would bottle but never sell, then purposely taint the milk of millions more coming after them, if I could ever catch them unready for me. But they talk only that good talk to each other and always stop whenever us women folk come around.
It's hard to stop with that poem, isn't it? Yes, it is. We're talking with Nikki Finney. She's a poet, assistant professor of creative writing at the University of Kentucky, founding member of the Appalachian Poets, and author of the new book, Rice. The line in there, they sell insurance and mean it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a different thing.
Yeah, it is.
You know, anyone could sell insurance,
right,
but to sell it and mean it. That's right. And that, just in that phrase, it says so much. You know, what you're telling me, their life is, we have this trend here in the last 10 years in the Northwest called voluntary simplicity.
Mm.
You know, people deciding they want to live at a lower level and maybe take the bus instead of the car.
Yes.
And it wasn't so much voluntary back then, but that was the way to live, and it comes out through the poem.
Right,
yeah. I mentioned the Appalachian Poets a couple of times. Why don't you tell us about that collective?
When I moved to Kentucky, there were an amazing amount of Black artists, writers, poets, visual artists that had never just come together under one umbrella to celebrate who they were. I mean, the population of African Americans in Kentucky, in the city where I'm in, Lexington, is about 5%, and so there had never just been an organized effort to say, here we are, this is what we do, and celebrate each other. So I taught a class at the University of Kentucky, and there were these wonderful poets, and I noticed that they were like having poetry moments in the elevator, in offices, you know, and just like, why don't we have a workshop? You know, we can workshop, we can get better, we can polish the work. And so suddenly I became the grandmother of this group that has been going strong for about 7 or 8 years. And right now the poets meet every Monday night and workshop their work. And when people want poetry heard around the state now, they call us up and we send 2 or 3 poets to read some of their work. So it's been an amazing experience to watch the group grow and to watch young poets become very serious about the craft of poetry as well as the what they have to say about their stories.
Yeah, it's amazing how young kids can really take it in and really just absorb if they're in that environment. And it's you don't get that environment very often. I think with the intent that you had is how you create things like that.
Let me just tell you something about the name, which I think is fascinating. I'm in the Appalachian region of the country. But if you looked up Appalachian in the Webster's Dictionary, 1985 edition, it said white residents of mountainous regions of the country. So there were these Black poets born and raised in the Appalachian region saying, well, what does that make me? So we're going to take this word Africa and we're going to slam it together with this word Appalachian and we're going to make this new word Afrolachian. And it's just been the most empowering, amazing experience to watch them just like, you know, hug this word and make it and see it on T-shirts and hats. And it's just like, it's just been a very powerful thing.
It lands on the table like a trump card, doesn't
it?
Yes,
it
does.
Really does.
And there's a line from your short biographical statement that I got from Tracy Hall, who prepared this interview and set it up. It says, and you're talking about that elevator poetry moment. Nikki Finney travels extensively, meets with young writers, reads her work, and conducts numerous writing workshops at universities and national art festivals, as well as around kitchen and coffee tables.
That's where the good stuff is born.
Yeah.
It's not just about, I mean, I support the university system, but, you know, some of the best, most profound stuff is coming out of communities and at kitchen tables. And I want to be there, too. So I want to include that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of great footnotes in the book. One referring to a bakery in Danville, Kentucky.
Yes.
Yeah. what was the Persian rolls?
The Persian rolls, yeah. The poem, the Goodfellas poem was dedicated to a younger poet who reminded me so much of my father. And he used to always come in eating these amazing things called Persian rolls. So I had to footnote it because nobody would ever know what it was.
They're going to wonder what that is, some kind of exotic foreign sex or something. I don't know. That's one thing that came to mind. There's a few other things that I need to get to. There's a line in the Savoy on page 158. Maybe you don't have to read it, but just tell us about it. It's a great mental picture. I'm not sure. I have my own mental picture. I'm not sure that's correct, but there's a line about Negrotarians from downtown. Which I could just picture in a zoot suit or something like that.
Well, that's exactly what it is. Uh-huh. I mean, the language of this poem has a lot of those words that came from the 1920s, from the zoot suit era, and from you know, the lingo of Harlem and the Savoy, and so you have you know, those kinds of words. You have an August ham is the same thing as a watermelon. And so that language I wanted to capture in this piece, because it was such a part of how I saw the scene unfolding.
You have to be careful what you say, because I have this poem called Bebop Dreamtime. Mm-hmm. And it ends with music you can feel deep inside your jelly roll soul. Mm-hmm. Now, I read it at this place on Capitol Hill, which caters mostly to African-American poets. And some guy said, I got to talk to you for a second. Come over here. Let me tell you what jelly roll means.
Right.
And perhaps it added more meaning to the poem room. I don't know. There's one other note I had to get to before, and there's actually two, but one for sure. Karen Johnson is referred to in the book. Mm. And she's just a wonderful lady, and most people would know her as Whoopi Goldberg.
Right.
In fact, which included me until I saw your book.
Right.
Personal friend, I'm guessing.
Me?
Yeah,
No, not at all. No. I thought it was important that Whoopi Goldberg's name, before she was Whoopi Goldberg, be called out loud in this piece, because it's really talking about changes and transformations. And I wanted to call her by her birth name, because that's who I was talking to when I wrote this piece to her.
Right.
So
right.
No, I don't know her.
Uh-huh. All right, there's one other piece that we do need to get on tape, and that's the one that was anthologized in Search of Color Everywhere, right here. You probably have that memorized, I'm guessing. I don't know. It's called Uncle.
Yeah, I don't have it memorized.
No. Well, we have the book here.
There's a great story I can tell you, but I don't know if we have time.
Yeah, we do.
But last year at the in New York, it's National Poetry Month, and they ask well-known dignitaries to choose a poem that meant something to them in their life and come and read it. And Ed Bradley came.
I was going to ask you about that.
Oh, yeah. It was just amazing. He chose this poem and he read it, and he said that the poem meant a lot to him because he had been raised by his uncles, and National Public Radio, played the program. And I had, when I got home that night, there were like 50 messages from friends of mine who had almost run into telephone poles who heard Ed Bradley reading this poem. So I always wanted to thank him. If he ever hears this, he changed my life when he read this poem, and it meant a lot to me that it meant a lot to him. Uncles. Mahogany men with massive hands and broad mustaches who outlive wars and married feisty oak-imaged women, be tight with money, tender of heart, and close to me. A gallery of fathers, each of whom planted me in the well-kept gardens of their youth and moistened the soil with vintage tobacco juice and asked only that I listen and grow to the rhythms therein. Men of mahogany and oak blossoms who relaxed late in life and understood that leaning was because of trust, not weakness. Men who, though not supposed to, protected, shielded their oaks, because, as they taught me, love is never what it's supposed to be.
Thank you for putting that on. Mm-hmm. When you got those phone messages, I'm assuming there were some hoots and hollers.
Oh, dozens of those. We've made it. We finally crossed over.
Yeah, yeah.
We're celebrating. Meet us at the pub, you know.
Well, it's a beautiful thing, and it's been great to have you on the show. Thanks for coming down.
Thank
to our
you
studios.
So much. Yeah. I appreciate the offer.
You got it. Nikki Finney has been our guest, a poet, assistant professor of creative writing at the University of Kentucky, founding member, as we heard, of the Afro-Latian Poets, and the author of the new book, Rice.